When we are walking down the street, minding our own business, we often don't pay much attention to those around us. We should be able to get to where we need to go and feel safe along the way, not concerned that anyone is following us or profiling us. That is a luxury that most white people have, but for people of colour, sometimes doing something as simple as walking down the street can lead to senseless acts of violence resulting from racial profiling, discrimination, and outright racism. That's what we're going to be talking about today as we uncover how racism killed Trayvon Martin. Hello and welcome to the 26th episode of Uncover True Crime Podcast and the 5th and last episode in our series Racism Killed. My name is Stephanie and this week we are uncovering 5 cases where racism killed a person of colour, where the victim never got justice or the case was never fully resolved. So far we have uncovered the conviction of George Stinney, the murder of Tamir Rice, Stephen Lawrence and the suspicious deaths of Jason McGowan, Errol McGowan and Johnny Elliot. You can listen to the podcast episodes on Apple, Spotify, Stitcher and other podcast streaming apps as well as on YouTube. You can also follow the podcast on Twitter at @uncover_pod and on Instagram at @uncovertruecrimepod. Before we get into the last episode of our Racism Killed series, I want to talk to you about Rashawn Nelson and Dante Robinson, two businessmen who had planned to meet an associate in a local Starbucks. This meeting was due to take place on the 12th of April this year, but didn't. Why? Because within 2 minutes of the men arriving, one of the Starbucks staff called police and asked them to remove the two black men for trespassing. Staff had approached the pair to ask if they would like to order anything, and the men explained that they were waiting for their associate and were about to start a meeting. That was the Starbucks employee's definition of trespassing. When the police arrived to escort the men out, other customers were confused as they hadn't done anything illegal. One customer recorded the whole thing on their phone and the CEO of Starbucks publicly apologised to the two men. He also ordered all US stores to close on the 29th of April so his employees could attend anti-discrimination training. I don't think one day of training is going to fix racial profiling or discrimination, although I can respect what the Starbucks CEO was trying to do. What I don't understand, however, is how two men sitting in a Starbucks minding their own business is trespassing. Would that have happened to two white men waiting to start a business meeting? No. But without any further ado, let's uncover how racism killed Trayvon Martin. Trayvon Benjamin Martin was born on the 5th of February 1995 in Florida to Sabrina Fulton and Tracy Martin. The couple divorced 4 years later in 1999, but were able to successfully co-parent their son together. In 2012, he was living with his mother in Miami Gardens, but would visit his father in Sanford often. He was a pupil at the Dr. Michael M. Kropp High School, and while he'd previously taken an honour class in English, his favourite subject was maths, and he had dreams of being a pilot. While he was known to get in a bit of trouble, like a lot of kids his age, his parents described him as a good, respectful kid. Tracy had this to say about his son, quote, "He was very respectable. He obeyed the laws of the land. He knew how to handle conflict. If something happened with an authority figure, because we spoke to him about that. He was a mama's boy and a father's boy. He was our child and we'll never be able to touch him again. That's who Trayvon Martin was," unquote. While Sabrina said, quote, "He was a very fun-loving, understanding young man with a beautiful smile," unquote. Trayvon had his whole life ahead of him until he was killed on the 26th of February 2012, just weeks after his 17th birthday. It was a Sunday and Trayvon had spent that weekend with his father, stepmother and stepbrother in Sanford, Florida. He went to the local shop to buy a bag of Skittles and some iced tea, but never made it home. His father Tracy reported him as a missing person the next morning, and that's when police connected Trayvon to a John Doe who had been shot the night before. Tracy identified Trayvon's body through crime scene photos. That would only be the start of the family's nightmare. Trayvon had called his girlfriend, Rachel Jean Tell, and told her that he was being followed by a, quote, "creepy ass cracker," unquote. The man following him was 27-year-old George Zimmerman, who lived in the same gated community as Tracy Martin. George had seen Trayvon walking home and decided that he looked suspicious, so called a non-emergency police line. I've never been 100% sure as to why George thought that Trayvon was suspicious, apart from the fact that he was a black boy walking down his gated community with his hood up on a rainy night. George was advised by the dispatcher not to follow Trayvon, but he ignored this. I am now going to insert a clip from George's call to the police.
Stafford Police Department, lines being recorded, the Sean.
Hey, we've had some break-ins in my neighborhood, and there's a real suspicious guy. It's Retrieview Circle. The best address I can give you is 111 Retrieview Circle. This guy looks like he's up to no good, or he's on drugs or something. It's raining, and he's just walking around looking about.
Okay, and this guy, is he white, black, or Hispanic?
He looks black.
Did you see what he was wearing?
Yeah, a dark hoodie, like a gray hoodie, and either jeans or sweatpants and white tennis shoes. He's here now. He was just staring.
Oh, he's just walking around the area?
Looking at all the houses.
Okay.
Now he's just staring at me.
Okay, and so it's 1111 Retrieview or 111?
That's the clubhouse.
That's the clubhouse. Do you know what the... He's near the clubhouse right now?
Yeah, now he's coming towards me.
Okay.
He's got his hand in his waistband. Yeah, he's a black male.
Okay. How old would you say he'd look?
He's got a button on his shirt. Late teens.
Late teens, okay.
Mm-hmm. Something's wrong with him. Yep. He's coming to check me out. He's got something in his hands. I don't know what his deal is.
Okay, just let me know if he does anything, okay?
He's got an officer over here.
Yeah, we got him on the way. Just let me know if this guy does anything else.
Okay. These assholes, they always get away. Yeah. When you come to the clubhouse, you come straight in and make a left. Actually, you would go past the clubhouse.
Okay, it says on the left-hand side from the clubhouse?
No, you go in straight through the entrance, and then you make a left. You go straight in, don't turn and make a left. Shit, he's running.
He's running? Which way is he running?
Down towards the other entrance of the neighborhood.
Okay, which entrance is that he's heading towards?
The back entrance.
Are you following him?
Yeah.
Okay, we don't need you to do that.
Okay.
All right, sir, what is your name?
George. He ran.
All right, George, what's your last name?
Zimmerman.
And, George, what's the phone number you're calling from?
407-435-2400.
All right, George, we do have him on the way. Do you want to meet with the officer when they get out there?
Yeah.
All right, where are you going to meet with them at?
If they come in through the gate, tell them to go straight past the clubhouse and make a left, and then they go past the mailboxes. You'll see my truck.
Okay, what address are you parked in front of?
I don't know. It's a cut through, so I don't know the address.
Okay, do you live in the area?
Yeah.
What's your apartment number?
It's a home. It's 1950. Oh, crap, I don't want to give that out. I don't know where this kid is.
Okay, do you want to just be with him right near the mailboxes, then?
Yeah, that's fine.
All right, George, I'll let him know to meet you with the out there.
Actually,
okay?
could you have him call me, and I'll tell him where I'm at?
Okay, yeah, that's no problem.
You need my number, or you got it?
Yeah, I got it. It's 407-435-2400.
Yeah, you got it.
Okay, no problem. I'll let him know to call you when they're in the area.
Thanks.
You're welcome.
Right before the dispatcher asked George if he was following Trayvon, there are people who believe they can hear George calling Trayvon a racial slur. CNN enhanced that piece of audio, and personally, I can clearly hear the racial slur that George Zimmerman is saying. I don't feel comfortable personally saying the word, however, I am going to play a piece of that audio 3 times, and I'll let you decide what you think he's saying. I've heard transcripts of the call that say that George said, quote, "I'm fucking cold," unquote, but George said in an interview that he actually called Trayvon a punk. I don't know what you think, but I definitely don't believe that he said punk in that part of the audio. While George is on the phone to the police, Shravon continues to talk to his girlfriend through his Bluetooth earpiece. She described how George asked Shravon what he was doing, and Shravon replies, asking George why he is following him. Rachel hears a scuffle, and at this point it seems as though his earpiece falls to the ground and the call ends. George and Shravon got into a fight, and George ends up shooting Shravon Martin with his gun. Shravon was unarmed. After hearing the gunshot, several neighbours called the police, who arrived within minutes. But sadly, Shravon Martin was pronounced dead at the scene. George claimed that he killed Shravon Martin in self-defence after Shravon threatened to beat him up during the scuffle. George had a bloody nose and some blood and abrasions on the back of his head. George was not arrested at the scene, and after going to the hospital to have his wounds seen to, he went home. During Shravon's autopsy, they tested his blood to see if he was under the influence of either drugs or alcohol at the time of the shooting. He was not, however, the same test was never conducted on George Zimmerman. I'm now going to tell you a bit about George Zimmerman. He was born on the 5th of October 1983 and was 27 at the time of the shooting. He was married to Shelley Zimmerman, and both of them were students at a nearby college. George was captain of the local neighbourhood watch, although this wasn't officially part of the National Neighbourhood Watch scheme, but instead just some neighbours taking it in turns to patrol the retreat at Twins Lake gated community where George and Shelley lived. After the shooting, his father, Robert Zimmerman, wrote a letter to the DEA saying that his son was not a racist and that he was in fact Hispanic. I'm now going to go over the timeline of events that unfolded after Shravon was murdered. A lot of this information came from a news article by CNN, which I will of course include in my list of sources over on my website if you want to check it out. Shravon's mother, Sabrina, vowed that she would never visit the place where Shravon was killed until she learned on the 12th of March that Sanford Police Chief Bill Lee said that George was not going to be charged with Shravon's murder because there was no reason for police to believe the shooting was anything other than self-defence. Sabrina said, quote, "I did it out of anger. When Tracy called me and said the police were not going to arrest the man who shot and killed Shravon, although they had him, they had the gun, and they were clear what had happened, I was in disbelief. That evening, I headed to Sanford. I couldn't believe they were going to let this person get away with murder. It is shocking to know that someone can shoot and kill a 17-year-old unarmed child, and the child goes to the morgue in a body bag, and the adult goes home to his bed. It is also disturbing," unquote. The day after this announcement was made, homicide detective Christopher Serino came forward saying he disagreed with this decision and said that he thinks George should be charged with manslaughter. He said George, quote, "failed to identify himself," unquote, as a neighbourhood watch member or a concerned citizen. He said that George's injuries were, quote, "marginally consistent with a life-threatening episode as described by him, during which neither a deadly weapon nor deadly force were employed by Shravon Martin," unquote. On the 14th of March, the case was handed over to the District Attorney's Office, and then 2 days later, on the 16th, the 911 recording from George and his neighbours were released to the public. On the 19th of March, the FBI and the Justice Department announced they were launching an investigation into the shooting. There was major public outcry that George had not yet been charged, and rallies and protests took place. A change.org petition was started, and over 1.3 million people signed the petition urging for George to be charged with murder. Robert Zimmerman appeared on TV saying that Shravon had threatened to beat George up and that he was forced to shoot him. His brother, Robert Jr., backed this up, saying that Shravon had broken George's nose. "I'm pretty sure that if someone was coming after me on a dark street with a gun, I would probably break their nose in self-defence as well. Although if it was me or any other white person walking down the street that night, George Zimmerman wouldn't have shot them. But anyway, I'll keep going." George set up a website where people could donate towards his legal fees and living costs, and the amount donated to him was somewhere upwards of $150,000. On the 11th of April, George Zimmerman was finally charged with second-degree murder. He was arraigned on the 20th of April and apologised to the Martins for the loss of their son. The judge set his bond at $150,000, which he posted on the 23rd of April, and pleaded not guilty to the charges against him. On the 1st of June, his bond bond was revoked as he and his wife Shelley had lied to the bail bondsman about their finances. Shelley was charged with perjury over this for not disclosing the amount of money donated to them by the public, instead saying that she and George were, quote, virtually indigent, unquote. She would later plead guilty to this and received 1 year's probation. George was taken back into custody on the 3rd of June, and then on the 5th, his bond was reset at $1 million. He posted 10% of this and was released. On the 13th of July, Alicia Garza, Patrice Collars, and Opal Tometi founded the Black Lives Matter organization as a direct result of Trayvon Martin's death. As I'm sure you all know, the Black Lives Matter organization and movement has done wonders in getting people talking about the racism Black people face. At his trial, George Zimmerman referred to the Black Lives Matter organization as, quote, terrorist cowards, unquote, and referred to them as terrorists on multiple occasions. On the 18th of July, George did his first on-air interview. He said that in hindsight, he wouldn't do anything different and that what happened that night was God's plan, and that to second-guess anything he did would be to second-guess God's plan. He referred to himself as a victim, describing the injuries he sustained in the altercation, but not once referred to Trayvon as the victim. He said that while he wouldn't change anything that he did, he wishes that there had been something he could have done which wouldn't have put him in the position where he had to take Trayvon's life. Victim blaming at its finest. On the 5th of December, he sued NBC for editing the 911 call that made him sound like a racist. Pretty sure no editing is needed to make that call sound like he's a racist, and I just want to put it out there, I did not edit one single second of that 911 tape. This lawsuit would later be dismissed. On the 9th of February 2013, a Day of Remembrance community peace walk and forum was organised by the Justice for Trayvon Martin Foundation, 4 days after what should have been Trayvon's 18th birthday. On the 30th of April 2013, George Zimmerman and his lawyers gave notice of their intent to present a Stand Your Ground defence. Just in case you're not from America or you're not entirely sure what a Stand Your Ground defence is, it basically means that if you are attacked or threatened, you can threaten or attack your attacker without fear of prosecution. Half of states in America have some kind of Stand Your Ground defence, but they're all worded slightly differently, so it does vary state to state. The judge ruled that evidence pertaining to Trayvon's, quote, familiarity with guns, unquote, his cannabis use and his history of fighting was not going to be allowed as evidence and that all female jury were to remain anonymous. George's trial started on the 24th of June. Most, if not all, of the trial was televised, and I'm not able to go into every single detail in this episode. However, there is a lot of information available online, which I will list in my sources over on my website. George did not take the stand in his own defence. Chris Serino said, quote, he was either telling the truth or he was a complete pathological liar, unquote. Trayvon's girlfriend Rachel took the stand, although she was heavily criticised by the media and didn't come off very well, mainly due to her choice of language on the stand, and she came across as slightly hostile. She had issues reading a letter that she had written to Trayvon Martin's parents, but said this was due to her having literacy issues. She said that Trayvon told her she was being followed by a, quote, creepy ass cracker, unquote. Although from what I was able to find, this is not a detail she gave at the time of the shooting. She said that she, Trayvon, and other people she knew did refer to white people as crackers, but this was not meant as an offensive term. She said that while she was on the phone to Trayvon, she did hear someone scream, and although she does believe it is Trayvon screaming, she can't be completely sure. These screams would be a very important aspect to the trial, as determining who these screams belong to would give the jury a better indication of who the aggressor in the fight was. It's never been conclusively determined if it was Trayvon screaming or George screaming, and people testified for the defence and prosecution saying that they were both Trayvon and George's, so this has never fully been determined. Although Trayvon's parents are convinced that the screams are his. The defence asked Rachel why she didn't call the police if she thought Trayvon was in a fight and screaming, but she said she thought he would be okay because he was next to his dad's house. She got visibly upset and frustrated during the cross-examination, and the judge had to ask her to calm down. Rachel didn't attend Trayvon's wake and originally said that the reason for this was because she was at the hospital that day, although this wasn't true. She said that she didn't want to go to the wake because she didn't want to see Trayvon's body, something which I personally can totally understand. She's 19 years old. I can't imagine how traumatic this whole thing must have been for her. People have also criticised Rachel because at the time of the shooting, she declared she was 16 years old in order to receive more protection and to remain anonymous. George Zimmerman's defence team did try to use this to imply that Rachel was a liar. And when confronted with the real reason she didn't go to Trayvon's wake, she said, quote, "You got to understand, I'm the last person. You don't know how I felt. You really think I wanted to go see his body after I just talked to him?" Unquote. During the trial, the jury also got to listen to tapes from the interview George Zimmerman gave the night that he killed Trayvon. And during these tapes, he sounds incredibly calm for somebody who has just shot and killed an unarmed 17-year-old boy. George claims that Trayvon said to him, quote, "You're going to die tonight," unquote. He said he cried out for help several times and that no one responded, and he killed Trayvon because it seemed as though he was reaching for George's gun. If I was walking down a street and someone was following me and got into a fight with me and I saw they had a gun, I would probably want to get it as well. Not to shoot them, but to make sure they couldn't shoot me. Although, again, I understand I do have white privilege and I would never have been in the situation Trayvon was in because I'm not black. Dr. Valerie Rio also took the stand and said that George's injuries from that night were, quote, "very insignificant," unquote, and that the scrapes on the back of his head could have come from his head hitting the pavement just one time, whereas George said that Trayvon slammed his head against the pavement repeatedly. The hoodie that Trayvon was wearing that night was entered into evidence, as well as George Zimmerman's jacket, but as to be expected, both of their DNA was found on both sets of clothing, although George's DNA was not found under Trayvon's fingernails. Forensic pathologists also took the stand to try and determine what position Trayvon and George were both in when Trayvon was shot. The bullet that killed Trayvon entered his heart through the front of his body from a left to right direction and hit one of his lungs. Some people claim that George must have been on top of Trayvon, while other people claim that Trayvon was on top of George. Again, it's never been definitively proven what position either man was in. The prosecution called 40 witnesses to try to prove their case that George Zimmerman had racially profiled Trayvon Martin and that the shooting was not in self-defence, while the defence called 19 witnesses. The judge presiding over the case did allow the jury to consider the lesser charge of manslaughter and gave instructions that in order to convict George Zimmerman of second-degree murder, they must find that George, quote, "acted in spite, malice or ill will without regard for human life." The trial lasted 2 weeks and the jury deliberated for just over 16 hours, but ultimately, they found George Zimmerman not guilty on both murder and manslaughter. The FBI and the Justice Department decided not to file civil rights charges against George Zimmerman, and to say that his life has been eventful after the trial is an understatement. Shelley left George 2 months after the trial ended, and a week or so after she filed for divorce, she and her father went over to the house to collect her things. She called 911 saying that he had punched her father in the face, cut up her iPad with a penknife after she tried to record the fight, and threatened her with a gun. Police responded to the call and she decided not to press charges, a decision that she says she now regrets. She said that the only reason she made that decision was because she was on probation at the time and didn't want any more legal trouble. She later withdrew the part of her statement that mentioned the gun, and a gun was not recovered at the residence. She said that while she believes the evidence and doesn't believe that George racially profiled Trayvon, she does now have doubts over his innocence in the case. In November 2013, George Zimmerman was charged with assaulting his girlfriend Samantha Sipe after he pointed a gun at her and started breaking things in her house because she asked him to leave. The following month, she asked for the case to be dropped, saying, quote, "I am not afraid of George in any manner and I want to be with him." unquote. He was arrested on another domestic violence charge after allegedly assaulting his girlfriend, although a different girlfriend than he was accused of assaulting previously. His lawyer, Don West, said, quote, "It's clear he hasn't been very lucky with ladies in the last few months," unquote. Yeah, we really tend not to like it when men, you know, assault us, but anyway. Charges were never filed as the victim recanted her statement, and I just want to point out that this is very common in domestic violence cases. In 2015, Matthew Apperson was charged with attempted murder after allegedly shooting at George Zimmerman during a road rage incident. In an odd case of irony, Matthew claimed self-defence and that George had threatened him first after he lost his temper when Matthew mentioned the Trayvon Martin case. Later on in 2015, George Zimmerman retweeted a photo of Trayvon Martin's body that had the caption, quote, "Z-Man is a one-man army," unquote. He said that this was a mistake and that he didn't realise that it was a photo of Trayvon's body, which, excuse my language, but that is absolute bullshit. On his Twitter page, which has now been deleted, he called Barack Obama a, quote, "ignorant baboon," unquote, and also said, quote, "cops' lives matter, black slime doesn't," unquote. And if that doesn't prove that George Zimmerman is a racist, I don't know what does. In what might be the worst update of all, he tried to sell the gun that he used to kill Trayvon Martin on an online auction website twice. Both times the listing was removed. The post said, quote, "I am honoured and humble to announce the sale of an American firearm icon. The firearm for sale is the firearm that was used to defend my life and end the brutal attack from Trayvon Martin on February the 26th, 2012, and referred to the gun as, quote, a piece of American history," unquote. I find this so repulsive. I don't even have the words to describe how absolutely disgusting this is that he tried to make money off of this gun. The bidding started at $5,000 but was up to $65 million when the site finally removed it. He said he was going to use the money he got from the sale of the gun to fight the Black Lives Matter violence against law enforcement officers and to, quote, "counter Hillary Clinton's anti-firearm rhetoric," unquote. He also said the money would be used to, quote, "ensure the demise of Angela Corey's persecution career," unquote. And just for context, Angela Corey was a special prosecutor appointed to investigate Trayvon's death. The listed ended with, quote, "if you want peace, prepare for war," unquote. In December 2019, George Zimmerman filed a $100 million lawsuit against Trayvon Martin's family, their lawyer, the prosecutors in his case, and the attorney's office. He claims that everyone conspired against him to frame him, which is absolutely ridiculous. And I don't know how that man has the nerve to sue the family of the boy he murdered. He claims that there was witness fraud in his case and that Trayvon's girlfriend's sister, Brittany, actually took the stand, not Rachel Jean Tell. According to the suit filed, the defendants, quote, "are alleged to either have known about or should have known about the witness fraud, obstructed justice, or lied repeatedly under oath in order to cover up their knowledge of the witness fraud," unquote. Now, I've never seen a photo of Brittany, however, there are photos of Rachel available online of her on the witness stand. I'm pretty sure that if it was Brittany on that stand instead of Rachel, this would have been uncovered a long, long time ago. His lawyer in the suit is Larry Klayman, known for other ridiculous lawsuits such as the birther suit against Barack Obama, which claimed that he could not be president as he obviously couldn't have been born in America as he's black. The lawyer for the Martin family, Ben Crump, said, quote, "I have every confidence that this unfounded and reckless lawsuit will be revealed for what it is. Another failed attempt to defend the indefensible and a shameless attempt to profit off the lives and grief of others. This plaintiff continues to display a callous disregard for everyone but himself. He would have us believe that he is the victim of a deep conspiracy despite the complete lack of any credible evidence to support his outlandish claims," unquote. In 2014, the Martin family founded the Trayvon Martin Foundation, which seeks to educate people and raise awareness of senseless gun violence. Tracy Martin said, quote, "As a parent and as an African-American man, I lost hope and faith in our justice system the day the killer of our son was acquitted. So our fight now is to make sure there are no other Trayvon Martins across this country. We feel strongly that the laws that pertain to African-Americans are different to the laws applying to other individuals. It's a conversation that this country is afraid to have. With all these killings and police brutalities, I feel as though a systematic racism is plaguing this country, and we have to take the blindfolds off. Racism is alive and well in America. I look back on the last 5 years and all the things we've gone through. I would never have imagined myself being an activist, being a voice for the voiceless. This was forced upon me. I just wanted to be a father," unquote. Trayvon's mum, Sabrina Fulton, said, quote, "That it's okay to shoot and kill someone who is unarmed and not be held accountable is an awful message to send to our teenagers. They are afraid. They are afraid to walk down the street in their own community. They're afraid to listen to music. They're afraid to wear hoodies. They're afraid to go to the park and play. They're afraid to be stopped by the police. They don't even feel like they're going to make it to be 21 years old. We can't have that message. I would never have chosen this for myself. I'm just making the best of a sour situation. Like the song in Beyoncé's album about making lemonade out of lemons. We are just average people and this could have happened to anyone. Trayvon could have been anyone's kid," unquote. This was a sentiment shared by the former President Barack Obama, who said in an infamous speech that he could have been Trayvon Martin when he was younger, or that if he'd had a son, his son could have been Trayvon Martin. And he's right. It's appalling to think, but this really could have happened to any black boy walking down the street. George Zimmerman shot Trayvon Martin because he didn't like the colour of his skin. The death of Trayvon Martin is what really made me wake up and realise the extent of the racism, discrimination, and injustice that black people all across the world continue to face. It is not right. It is not fair. And remember, no lives matter until Black Lives Matter. All photos and sources related to this case can be found on our website at www.uncovertruecrimepodcast.co.uk. Thank you for listening till the very end, and thank you to everybody who has listened to all the episodes of the Racism Killed series. I will continue to educate myself on the issues that black people face, and I hope that you do too. I would like to also say that this week does not end me covering cases where black people or people of colour haven't received justice. I will continue to cover cases like this as my podcast continues to grow, and if you've got any cases you would like to suggest to me, my case suggestions form is always in the description of all my episodes. Please stay safe and have a good night.